Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
At times, we feel inclined to say that people seem not to pay enough attention to the wild creatures, that our technological age is cutting us off from the wonders of our natural world. Probably true, and yet, in truth, we are still fascinated by the wild creatures. This past week, I visited San Diego Zoo to visit a new exhibit they just opened, and I want to tell you, people love animals. When we return, we take a walk on the monkey trail and learn what is happening between humans and animals when they come together with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wildside News. Reality is such a complex thing to comprehend. As I report the changes taking place that affect the natural world, the large pictures of drilling in Anwar, the melting of the ice caps, the rising oceans, the changes in elephant trunk size as a direct result of poaching, and on, it, yes, seems sometimes as if people don't really care that much about the natural world anymore. But reality is a complex thing. Living here in San Diego, I'm lucky to have a variety of world-class celebratoriums of nature. The legendary San Diego Zoo and its sister San Diego Wild Animal Park, and of course SeaWorld and the Scripps Aquarium. On any day in San Diego, 7 days a week, every day of the year, if you drive to any one of these places, you will notice one thing for sure. The parking lots are full, and I mean full. A few weeks back, I headed out to the Wild Animal Park on a Tuesday. I had to struggle to find a place to park. And this past Monday, I headed on down to the San Diego Zoo, which is associated with the beautiful Balboa Park. And it took me 20 minutes to find a place to park in the sprawling 3-acre parking lot. The place was packed on a Monday. I was on a quest to do this story about the San Diego Zoo's newest and most ambitious exhibit. It's called Monkey Trails and Forest Trails. Thanks to the generous support of the Joan B. Kroc Foundation, that is, the McDonald's fortune, after 3 years, this new exhibit has opened. It's located in the middle of the zoo and serves as a unique hub that can lead visitors off to all the other exhibits in the zoo. It was built to replace the old Monkey House exhibits, which were those caged animal exhibitions, and every attempt was made to turn this new exhibit into a much more natural-feeling experience for the visitor and, equally important, a more natural place for these caged animals to live. To be quite honest, I feel lucky to have visited the exhibit when I did, and I encourage you as well, if you're in San Diego, to be sure to take this in, because here is the really intriguing part of the experience. Having opened just over a month ago, the animals themselves are experiencing, many for the first time, real natural objects, things like living plants, grasses, flowers and shrubs, trees, sand, and in some cases, other species. The Monkey Trails exhibit features animals from Africa and Asia, most of which are rare or endangered. I talked with Kimberly Livingstone about the overall design of the exhibit.
It's a huge site. It's right in the center of the zoo. It's called Heart of the Zoo. It's phase three. We have a variety of animals here. There's different species of pigs. There's clouded leopards that are primarily nocturnal, so you can see them really well at night being active. And then we have a variety of primate species, golden-bellied mangabeys, Lowest guenons, mandrills that you see here. There's colobus monkeys, Schmitz guenon. All these animals are native to Africa, all these primates that I just mentioned.
And how long did it take you to put this together?
It's been ongoing for, I don't know exactly, I would say at least 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, everybody's put in a lot of effort, and it's, you know, really paid off for what we're able to exhibit to the public.
So you must have some really interesting people here in the sense of being able to put these exhibits together, some real talent and knowledge. in terms of many aspects of animals, their needs, behaviors, health, et cetera, to create this?
Yeah, definitely. We're working jointly with people who are in horticulture, animal behaviorists, keepers, curators, just people from all different, you know, facets. And we work directly, we were working directly with the construction workers because they needed to know, you know, which way they should do this or that or where you want something placed. And so we all work together as a team.
How much effort is it to make sure that an animal can handle this? I mean, there has to be some sort of screening process. Possibly not every animal can handle all these people gawking at them.
That's true. What we tried to do was slowly acclimate the animals to the exhibits and to the inside bedroom areas. So we gave them a few days in there, and we'd watch their behavior and see when they looked like they were comfortable and they're eating and they're relaxed. And then we gave them access into the exhibits and just watched them because, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. Of course, we can try to predict it, but you know how that usually goes.
Yeah.
So we released them out into the exhibits and then just watched what they did out there. And if there were any problems, we'd address them right away. Or, you know, it's also a work in progress. We're adding different types of climbing structures on a regular basis, maybe more ropes or more branches, depending on, you know, how the animals are behaving or what to fill their needs inside the exhibit.
It's a terrific variety of animals and plants. One of the unique challenges to this exhibit was moving in the keystone plant that is the anchor around which the exhibit develops.
This is our large ficus tree that's about estimated to be about 75 years old that was moved. It used to be up in the front of the zoo.
Now, ficus, most people think of that little thing in the corner of their office, okay? The ficus. This is different. Talk about this. I never knew that a ficus could quite reach this spectacle.
This is a giant ficus tree. If you can imagine being alive for 75, 80 years in the zoo and, you know, being taken care of, the buttresses on it, you can see are about 10 feet across, and there's at least four of them. And I don't know, the height on it is probably 80 feet or so. But the whole concept was to be able to be down on the forest floor and then access the upper canopy of the ficus tree, and that's what the upper walkway actually goes through, the ficus tree itself. Okay. And then you can look into the exhibits and be pretty much at the canopy level, so you can view the animals from that level as well as from the lower ground level.
The natural setting cleverly incorporates some unique animal management strategies to help in keeping the animals healthy in a way that brings a unique cooperation between the animals themselves and the handlers.
Tanya's down there now, and she is working with one of the female mandrels. I guess she's leaving now, but and there's a male and two females in here, and what we try to do, what we provide for the guests, is that we do training sessions with them right up at the wire. So if we walk down there, you could really get a good idea of what happens. And we train the animals for many reasons, but primarily it's for medical reasons and try to lessen the stress in a captive environment. So, for example, if an animal has a cut on his finger or on his foot or something like that, instead of actually immobilizing the animal to check out the wound and address it, we train them to present their hands to us, present their feet, open their mouth so we can look at their teeth, you know, listen to their heart with a stethoscope, a variety of things like that. And they do it on a willingly basis, and they do it for positive reward.
So you're giving them classic training with a reward system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so here's PJ coming up now. So he's really good at doing the training, and they actually want to work for you. They present the behaviors to you. They offer the different behaviors to you. And, you know, it's fun for them, and it gives them, it's part of their enrichment that we provide for them in a captive setting. So, and also then the guests have the opportunity to ask us questions about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and they can get a really close-up view of the animal at the same time and get some information about the individuals.
Is that a new concept? I mean, it seems to me as if it is, because it seems to have, so often people would, you know, as you say, put the animal to sleep for a while temporarily and then work on it. But those are hard on animal systems.
Exactly. And so we've really been, for the past few years, we've really been concentrating on training these animals specifically for those purposes. And it's worked out great. I mean, you see that there's a lot less stress put on the animal just for minor medical procedures that we're able to do while they're awake. I mean, there's even instances where we've been able to draw blood from one of the monkeys who's presenting their arm to us on a and given rewards during the whole time. And it's up to them if they want to do it or not. If they don't want to work at that time, then they don't have to. So it's really up to the animal if they want to participate.
Do you work with the animal from the inside or the outside?
Both. We actually can work with them while they're on exhibit, and we can call them into their rooms if they stay in at night, and we can work with them in some chutes that we specifically designed for training sessions and to get weights on them on a daily basis to collect urine, to collect feces, things like that.
Is that something that I could see?
Sure.
I'd love to see that, actually, kind of the back side of where you're working with with those things.
You can walk right down
there. Okay, great.
See it. Actually, the public can see it as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they can watch us working through the chutes down here, and they can also watch from the outside through the mesh.
Uh-huh.
So
this is somewhat open to the public, this facility here.
It's, everything is pretty much open to the public except the inside bedrooms where the animals can stay at night.
The new exhibit is a multi-level matrix which allows you to see various ground-dwelling animals, then walk upwards, literally through the giant ficus tree, and into the more arboreal worlds of the tree dwellers. Among the more notable residents are the clouded leopards, dwarf crocodiles, the pygmy hippopotamus, and undoubtedly, the most notable species in the exhibit, the mandrills.
Why don't you take a lead here? And
let's walk on down the driveway.
Oh boy, I'm excited now. Never been to this past this point. Now we're going inside an exhibit here. This is exciting, thanks.
And there's PJ over there. He's getting a drink right now, and he likes to watch other people work.
Mm-hmm.
So
should you say hi to PJ?
Yeah,
now, does he vocalize at all?
Curious. Oh, yeah, he vocalizes.
Uh-huh.
And you'll know it when he does.
Yeah, I bet.
And then that's one of the other females up in the bedroom door there. Mm-hmm. And then here are the chutes that we call them into to do our training sessions.
Oh, yeah.
So the people above would be able to see that as well as the people up on the other walkway. So there, you can see that there's different compartments, and you can keep, you know, animals separated. You can keep one in one compartment while you're working with the other one. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the scale right there. So we can call them in there. We can get a weight on them. there's a channel cut in the front of the chute so they can get their arms through there and their legs.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not subjecting ourselves to risk of getting bit because they can't fit their face through there, so we can access different body parts through that area in a safe manner for both the animals and the keepers.
Do you ever come in, I mean, literally contact in a more kind of in a back room, you know, put them on a table, more like a vet's scenario?
No, any type of vet procedures are usually done up at the zoo's hospital.
Okay.
So this is all with the animals awake, fully awake, you know, just working for a positive reward system.
Gotcha.
So he's headed up to the bedroom doors there now, PJ. Go check it out and see what's going on.
Tell us about PJ.
PJ is the adult male mandrill. He's in the exhibit with two other females. He actually follows the girls. You'd think sometimes it would be the other way around, where the girls would be following him because he's this big, beautiful, handsome animal. And it's really not that way. You'll see the girls move to come into the bedrooms, and it's PJ who'll turn around and follow them inside. But he's very smart. He's a very gentle animal. He works well with the keepers. And, you know, we really enjoy him.
So playing a little hard to get maybe works pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. I think the females, you know, have his number.
He actually vocalized a little bit. Seemed like he was kind of like peering around the corner here and making noises. He's a beautiful animal. What an amazing creature.
Oh,
red
yeah.
lips, yellow under the chin, and then this long nose. I I was curious if perhaps he has a more developed sense of smell, but I don't know that that would be...
Yeah, I'm not really sure, yeah. You know, if I could answer that.
Yeah.
But what we always say is that PJ's rear end is just as pretty as his face.
I'll leave it at that, okay? If I start making any comments, I'll get myself into trouble. But, yeah, he's got a very, very attractive butt, okay?
Well,
very
that's,
colorful.
That's
very colorful.
Females are looking.
Okay,
for,
as I'm looking,
know?
I mean, he's a primarily kind of a orangish, brown animal with kind of yellow and orangish highlights, but then his back end is blues and reds
mm-hmm.
and pinks
Purple.
And yellows and purples. Yeah, it's. I must say, if that doesn't work, nothing will. Yeah. Exactly.
And actually, if you wanted to ask Tanya about his personality,
oh, sure.
Don't be walking away. Come here. Just give us a little bit of his. Well, as you saw earlier with him, he has a lot of personality. He's a really great monkey, but like when we were trying to feed him, he really needs a lot of attention. We do a lot of training with him a couple times a day because it calms him down. It actually feels like he feels he has a purpose when he knows what's expected of him. And he gets more, don't want to say aggressive, but he's more forceful with himself the less we work with him. I think he gets bored is what it is. So the more we interact with him and more we ask him, we do the training with him, the more, less aggressive he is, the more calm he is around his girls, the more calm he is around feeding times. That is a threat behavior. That's a dominance behavior that he'll do. You'll see when he'll do it, a lot of times the girls will immediately, like, if he does it to them, they'll turn around and present their backside as a submissive gesture to him.
He's a bobbing of the head and kind of lowering the shoulders very rapidly, right.
Yeah. And sometimes he'll have like a low grunt, a growl with
yeah.
it. Yeah, that's definitely a threat for him. He'll also do what we call a smile or a grimace. It's usually, in his case, it's a friendly gesture. The girls do it, but very much less so.
Now, do you have actual behaviorists who are studying these animals?
We have a behavioral department, but all animal behaviors, for them, unless there's a special program that comes in or a group that comes in, we do pretty much all the observations and... on our individual animals. There are different groups that are in the zoo that do different behavioral studies on different groups that we have here of the primates, but no specific study going on currently with these guys. He'll also do this grunting noise. It's a vocalization to find out where the rest of the troop is, and the rest of the troop is supposed to vocalize back to him if they're not in visual with each other.
The mandrill enclosure was spacious. You really had to look to find them, which is certainly different for a zoo. And this spaciousness had already brought on a greater expression of monkey business. I just read an article about a panda that escaped in China. The residents chased it, thinking it was a burglar, but then realized it was a panda. And the thing they noted the most was that it moved entirely differently than any of the pandas they'd seen in captivity in their zoos. It ran and jumped, was agile and quick. There's something about freedom and the natural world that revitalizes us all. Our journey to the San Diego Zoo continues in just a moment when we return with Your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.